The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
CinemaSins has a fan club. It's called the Sin Club, and members get all sorts of things like early episodes, bonus videos, merch discounts, and even monthly bonus podcasts. Membership starts at $3 a month, and you can sign up now at patreon.com/CinemaSins.
And yeah. I wanted to make sure that the movie is not creating a wrong impression. This is not about, this is not Spider-Man and the Multiverse, you know, right?
Welcome to SinCast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the SinCast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Jonathan Watkins.
Hello, hello.
And today we have a very special guest. It's director Gaurav Seth, who did a movie called Multiverse. It's in theaters November 12th, on demand and digital November 16th, and on DVD and Blu-ray January 11th. Gaurav, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. How did you get involved with this project?
The script for Multiverse was sent to me by the screenwriter, Doug Taylor, who's a good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And, I've known him for years, but we haven't worked together. So he sent me the script that he'd written, and, he told me a little bit about it. I was totally intrigued, and he said that the producers were looking for a director, and he had recommended me. He sent me the script. I absolutely loved it. I spoke to the producers, gave them my take on it. I did have some thoughts on the script and some changes. Mm-hmm. And I gave them my vision for the movie, and they seemed to like it. And then literally, I think within 2 months or 3 months after I read the script, we were ready to roll.
Oh, wow. Nice. What were exactly some of the things that you wanted to add to this script that wasn't in there at first?
Right. The topic was very intriguing, obviously. So, mm-hmm. This whole multiverse concept, the quantum mechanics, I've always been fascinated by it. The subject matter was totally up my alley, and I love the way Doug dealt with it. Mm-hmm. The focus of the script is not really the science; it's more the drama created by the science, right?
Right.
So, the focus is on the characters and the interesting dramatic situations that they get into, and we get to explore with them what it would be like if you come face to face with another version of yourself and the what if scenario. I really enjoyed the dramatic implications of that. And everything was great. The script as I read it was great. I just felt the end could have been a little different. And so I came up with this idea came to me, and without really giving away, what if mm-hmm. we do this? And and that was a great moment because Doug right away, as soon I didn't even finish my sentence, and he right away said, "Yes, that's it. That's absolutely brilliant, and let's go with that." And so, really, the end, I would say, the last, basically the last twist in the movie that wasn't there in the draft that I read.
Oh, cool. And you have, this movie has two deaf actors in it, Marley Matlin and Sandra May Frank, who are playing mother and daughter. How important was it to get that kind of representation into this movie?
Well, it was great. And to start off, I was surprised when I read the script and, you know, these deaf characters were in the script. And, you know, one of them was a lead character and one of them was supporting. And I was surprised because, you know, as it is, there aren't that many movies with deaf characters and science fiction, you know, that's even rare. So, so I really dug that. I thought that was a great choice that, that Doug made to make these characters deaf. And when I read the script, Marley Matlin was attached to it, to the script. So that again, you know, dramatically changed my impression of the whole thing. And I thought, oh my God, that's fantastic.
Right.
And yeah, it was great. It was unique. I thought, as I said, you know, it's so rare in science fiction, especially. And then, you know, when we started casting, you know, we sent out, in fact, Marley Matlin sent out, you know, posted a tweet, you know, with an open call among deaf actors to audition for this.
Mm-hmm.
And we got tons of responses. And then, yeah, when I saw Sandra, I was right away from the very first audition, I was blown away by her performance. And I just thought she was perfect for it. And yeah, and so we were so lucky to have both of them on board.
Well, I love that you kept cast Sandra, because I mean, I don't know if this is giving anything away, but at one point in the movie, you have to give a voice to her, which I mean, and the way I guess you had to go about it was probably more challenging than just casting an actor that isn't, you know, deaf. So I thought that was really neat, and it worked. I mean, it was seamless. You couldn't tell. So I thought that was really cool.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because that was a tough scene to ADR. It took us forever. You know, so the first thing was, we knew that these deaf characters had to be deaf actors. So that was obviously, that was non-negotiable. And even though there is, you know, as you said, a section in the movie where the deaf character has to not be deaf, there's another version of the character that is not deaf. And we knew that's going to be very challenging because, you know, with Sandra especially, she's been deaf from birth. So she genuinely doesn't know how certain sounds sound, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it is difficult for her sometimes to be able to mouth the character, the words even, you know?
Yeah.
The shape of the lips, you know? And that was very difficult. We had someone... you know, our script supervisor actually looking at her very closely, you know, practicing with her to make sure that her lip movements, even though she's not making any sounds, that her lip movements are right, so that later when we voice it, it looks fine.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't as easy, you know, as it sounds. It was very difficult. And, you know, sometimes there are portions where it's not really clear that, you know, she's not really making the right mouth movements, and it was tough. But we had this wonderful voice actor here in Toronto who's very experienced, and you know, she did a wonderful job. You know, to not only to get, you know, match the lips. There is, it's a very dramatic scene, so there's a lot of performance in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so to do all of that, that scene took us, I think, literally like a whole day. It's not a very long scene. It's a few minutes, but it took a whole day for us to, I think something like 11 hours of ADR.
Wow.
For that scene.
Wow.
Yeah, it was tough, you know, and then we had to, and the dialogue editor, of course, had to really, he earned his pay on just on that one scene. It took a lot of editing to get that right. But I'm so glad you said that, because a few people did, mentioned this to me as well when we, you know, the film was in a few film festivals, and after the screening, some of the audience members would walk up to me and say that, you know, that kind of, that scene surprises people, you know, when she actually starts speaking, and it seems real, and everyone knows, of course, it is, you know, it's movies, so someone is voicing it, but it seemed real, and so that was really a relief.
You even, it's amazing how many different ways she communicates in this movie too. She has the phone that translates the, you know, into a voice dialogue or whatever, and then she's obviously, there's sign language in here, and she even uses her own voice several times as well in this. I think it's kind of amazing that they went, how many different methods there are to communicate in this that she uses, and is that typical? Does she herself do that in real life? Use all those different techniques?
Yes, actually, Sandra, as you can imagine, brought a lot to this role in terms of changes and finessing things, and so there are a lot of things in the script that weren't there. Mm-hmm. That she said, oh, you know, we don't do that at all. We do it this way, you know. And so so that changed, you know, she made all those changes in the script. And obviously, we were totally open to that. And we wanted to make it as credible as possible for the deaf audience, because we are hoping, and you know, that was certainly the case during the festival run, that this movie has a, you know, a deaf audience, inbuilt deaf audience, you know. Mm-hmm. And which is again rare, because they don't get to see a whole lot of sci-fi with deaf characters, so there is a, you know, an attraction there, and so we wanted to make this feel credible for them, and so in terms of these modes of communications, she said that the phone, you know, app, there are those apps, although she said that she doesn't use that a lot, because I mean, she, her friends and you know, the people that she communicates with on a regular basis are used to her communicating, you know, and they don't need that app, you know, even if the friend is not deaf, they have a, you know, either through sign language or other means, they it's easy for her to communicate. But she said that, yes, when it is a complete stranger, for example, my first meeting with Sandra, I never worked with deaf actors before. And it was, and I don't think I really had a proper conversation with a deaf person ever in my life. Maybe just a little bit here and there, but, you know, really sitting down and discussing something substantial. I don't think I'd ever done that before until I met Sandra. And so it was very tricky in the beginning. And and she used that app to communicate with me. And then I thought, okay, yeah, for someone like me that who hasn't had any, you know, exposure with this, that app would make total sense. But then in the movie, you know, she's close friends with these people, right? So she's a very smart actor. And so she said that, you know what, let's make, you know, we can use this as, you know, conveying something more. Like, for example, with one of the characters, Jerry, she's not that close. So she uses the app to communicate. But with Danny, who she's close with, she Danny knows sign language, and she communicates, you know, via sign language. So then that, you know, almost adds another layer of information. Okay, yeah, they're all friends, but she's more closer to Danny than she is to Jerry. So those subtleties then all come into it, which are not in the script, you know.
That's a great little addition there. I didn't notice that when I watched this. That's kind of an awesome revelation.
And the thing is, you don't have to be conscious of that. The fact that you didn't notice it is totally fine. I don't expect the audience to be conscious of that. But the thing is, it works subconsciously. You immediately get the feeling that, oh, you know, she's probably, you know, and when she does, when we see those scenes, when she's more closer with Danny and, you know, they have a thing going. And so then that's more credible and we believe it. And with Jerry, it's more of a friendship and there's nothing of that sort. So even if the audience doesn't notice it, I think subtly it works and they unconsciously get that information.
Yeah. And we've spoken on Marley Matlin and Sandra May Frank. How did you round your cast out? How did you find your other friends in this one?
Yeah, so it as I said, Marley was attached to the project before anyone else was cast, and then we had to find these four main characters. And so with Sandra, it was different. It was a completely, you know, because, you know, of this, the deaf character, and it wasn't as simple as just going to a casting agent and, you know, looking at options. We wanted to cast a wider net. And so, you know, Marley and her background with theater actually helped, because a lot of the responses that we got were from theater deaf actors. And so that was a completely different ball game. Well, with the other actors, they're all Canadians. So we put out a casting call, and we had many of these actors, actually all of them, we had them in mind even before, and we were speaking to their agents. But it was a little tricky because it's an ensemble piece. All four of them had to be greenlit. It wasn't individually. It wasn't like, okay, we have one out of four or two out of four. It was like either we have all four out of four or we don't have anyone, you know? It was so in terms of the funding agencies, the producers, the distributors, everyone, all the stakeholders and the people, you know, who had to greenlit this project, it took a lot of mixing and matching. And honestly, it was a little nerve-wracking because it went up to literally like 2 days before the shoot that the cast was finally finalized, you know. And so there are so many people who had to sign off on it. And with this combination, thankfully, these four people kind of together, they worked for everyone. And, you know, we got the sign off literally, as I said, 48 hours before we went to camera. And
wow. Yeah. How difficult was it for these actors to play two different versions of the same character?
Right. It was challenging, but it was fun. I know they had a lot of fun with it, as did I, because there are so many things, in a situation like this where the actor can bring, which are not in the script. And they cannot be in the script. These are small, subtle things. And so with each and every one of them, I worked, one-on-one, because they are different characters and their approach, and they're different people, you know, they're different personalities as actors. So their approach to these things was a little different. And it was very interesting. There was a lot of, kind of preparation required for that. So it wasn't just about things, what we did on the set, but rather before, even though there's none of it in the movie, we worked out, extensive backstories for what the other character's backstory is. How is?
Oh, really?
Yeah, just for their information, just to know. Okay.
Right.
Loretta. Okay, how Loretta in this universe and Loretta from the other universe? What are their differences? And the thing is, we know that these universes are identical, but with minor differences. But we know minor differences over a period of time can result in very dramatically different results on a person, right? So mm-hmm. a choice that one of the characters, the other character may have made 10 years ago, can have a ripple effect, and 10 years later, it has affected that person's personality and character in some tangible way. And yeah. So we worked out these backstories, and then the actors, they came up with small things. Okay, Loretta from the other universe won't do this and won't react this way. She would rather react that way. And so small things like that. And then again, even in terms of appearance, there was a little bit of that. And that was more pronounced with the character of Jerry, because he is probably, that character is the most different from
yes.
the two versions. Mm-hmm. So there, even the external persona was a little more different, was more pronounced. The difference was more pronounced. And so we had a lot of fun with that as well. And Monroe, who the actor who played that character, he was fantastic in coming up with these small differences that, in the way that Jerry, the other Jerry, carries himself as opposed to the one from this universe. And so it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I always enjoy it when an actor is playing two different characters, whether they be twins or something, and you can always tell which one it is immediately without them saying "I'm the evil Jerry" or whatever. You know, it's a pretty nifty trick that happens there. What was your biggest challenge in telling this story?
Well, I think the biggest challenge when I read the script, you know, the ideas are so interesting and so, you know, like fantastical, because they send you on this journey, right, with what if, and, you know, and you start imagining things and all of that. And given the genre, sci-fi and multiverses and everything, I just wanted to make sure that people do not have the wrong impression of this movie going into it, because mm-hmm. you know, this is a different story. It is still it is more character driven. It is more about the implications that the multiverse theory and doppelgangers and, you know, the chance to come face to face with another version of yourself, all those cool ideas. The focus of this particular film is about how it impacts the characters and mm-hmm. and how dramatic, you know, the dramatic situations that they get put into and how they react to it. That's the focus of this film. And yeah. I wanted to make sure that the movie is not creating a wrong impression. This is not about, this is not Spider-Man and the multiverse, you know, right?
Right.
It's not about just going and jumping into another universe with a completely different thing and exploring that, however fantastical that is. And it is very interesting. That's
yeah.
obviously, you know, that's interesting to anyone. But this movie is different. And we are exploring a different side of it, of the multiverse theory and the implications of it.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So I just wanted to make sure that the, you know, that the audience is not misled mm-hmm. And doesn't come into, you know, especially in the first, you know, 10 minutes and all, you think, okay, this is going to be a really, you know, an action pack. They're going to be jumping from universe to universe and, you know, something. No, this is different, right? And so that, I think, was the challenge, to set the right tone in the first 10, 15 minutes. And to get the audience interested in this aspect of the movie by basically, mm-hmm. Having the audience fantasize themselves. What if I, you know, one day walk into my bedroom and see the other version of me sitting over there, you know,
mm-hmm.
and to go on this little journey with me and with our characters and explore that side of things, not the fantastical side of things, but something more relevant to us in our daily lives, you know.
Yeah.
And what if really, like, tomorrow you wake up and, you know, there's someone else making breakfast, you know, in your kitchen, and what are the implications of all of that, you know? So that, I think, was the challenge, to strike the right tone, to make use of this very interesting premise, but shift the focus to the characters and make that interesting. I think that was really the biggest challenge, and you know, and that works on different levels: the tone of the movie, the obviously the performances, and the music, the sound design, and everything. You know, hopefully, you know, comes together and helps tell the story that we are trying to tell, and not mislead, you know, the audiences into thinking, oh, and I thought it was going to be that, and, you know, and then it turns and it feels like a letdown. So I think that was really, for me, that was really the big challenge.
There were elements to this that reminded me of the movie Primer,
Great. I'm so happy you mentioned that.
Yeah. Because that sort of has that same, like, where it's, you know, Primer's more about time travel. Although I think, when you look at time travel and or multiverse, you start getting into the same kind of paradoxes and things.
Absolutely.
Like that. So Primer you said you were excited that I said that. Is there an influence there at all?
Oh, absolutely. Like, inspiration, definitely. Like, Primer, another movie I would mention is Coherence, which mm-hmm. was another, mm-hmm. A low budget movie about multiverses. So again, that's exactly what we were trying to do here in terms of the territory, exploring the other interesting angles. Again, with Primer and Coherence, they use the premise, but they use it, you know, to explore interesting dramatic situations with their characters. Mm-hmm. And the movies are not about the premise itself. They're about right. the implications the premise have on their characters. And so that is what I was interested in as well, to do in this movie. And that's why, those are great references. And that's exactly what we are trying to do. And hopefully, people will see inspiration there. And I thought, those are great movies there. I really love those movies. And mm-hmm. If people get reminded of them, I would be really happy.
Yeah. this movie was once called Entangled, correct?
That's right.
Yeah. Which, you know, when you watch this, you'll realize that, the four, the four characters that come into the universe have these tattoos that say Entangled on them and everything. There's more meaning to the name Entangled, of course, than just the tattoo. Could you maybe talk about that a little bit?
Yes. And actually, the word entangle is literally what this premise is about. It's quantum entanglement, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's where this, the word entangle came for. That was the original title. And, I thought it was apt. The only problem is when, while we were shooting and actually while we were in post, there was literally another sci-fi movie called Entangled that came out. And I thought, okay, this is all going to be confusing. And
right.
That was, I think, out of necessity that, there are several movies, called Entangled, but, some of them are 90s or whatever. Doesn't really matter. But there was one, I think, in 2020. Mm-hmm. When we were actually planning to release this until the pandemic happened and that pushed things. But
right.
We knew we had to kind of, the worst thing that can happen is, you get confused with another movie that is completely different and that has nothing to do with quantum entanglement, actually. That, I don't know why that movie was even called Entangled.
Right.
And then when, during the pandemic, when things, got delayed and we were literally waiting with the distributors, then kind of came up with Multiverse. And I really loved it. I thought that was great because not only it is, kind of really the term is hot right now with all, with Spider-Man and everything else. But at the same time, it literally is that. So it's not like we are, we are just trying to cash in on something. This movie is literally about multiverse. In fact, the very first sentence of the movie is, about the multiverse theory, right?
Right.
That is literally the first sentence of the movie. So I thought that was a great title. And I think Entangled is great too, but there are just way too many movies out there with that name.
Right.
The tattoos led to one of my favorite lines in the movie too, where the character says something like, "Life would be a lot easier if we just wore short sleeves."
That's true. That is true. Yeah, that was a good way to, you know, kind of just release a little bit of, you know, steam, because it just comes in the middle of a really tense situation, right? And it's and I love the reaction. I watched the movie with a, with, you know, a lot of different audiences, you know, in different countries during the festivals. And I love the reaction to that line every time. It is fantastic.
That in speaking of lines, there's that also that one that there was one in there that I liked where, you know, one of the characters wants to talk with another person privately or whatever, like go to another room and talk privately. And he's like, what are you, my guidance counselor? Where all was the shot? I'm assuming Canada, but where in Canada?
Yeah, actually, this was shot in and around a city called Sudbury, which is in northern Ontario. It's about 4 hours drive from Toronto. And it's a small city, but a lot of movies get shot there. A lot of Hollywood movies as well. In fact, when the summer we were shooting, there were so many crews out there, we were having really a tough time finding crew members.
Wow.
There were several movies being shot, and it's very popular because first thing, it's a beautiful place. I mean, the area around Sudbury, there's a lot of many lakes, mountains, and all together, and rocky, terrain. It's beautiful. And the other thing is, for a low budget movie like ours, there are some generous tax credits involved if you shoot up there. So that was one of the reasons. Yeah, this movie is entirely shot, except for one day. We did a one day shoot in Toronto itself.
Okay. What was your hardest day on set?
Hardest day? Every day was hard.
But
because for different reasons. Sometimes it was, like the, again, not giving too much away, there is this scene, on the lake where two characters are talking to each other, and one of them is in the water, one of them, one of them is not. And they are the same character. So that was a tough scene logistically.
I noted this one as your possible hardest day on set because it was a difficult one.
It was very difficult. And the other, the thing is, we don't realize is how much things slow down when you cannot directly communicate with an actor. For example, with Sandra, I had to communicate through an interpreter.
Right.
And so everything just grinds to a halt, it is so slow, everything, And in that scene where, she's in the water and then on the other side, she's on standing on the rock and I'm somewhere in the middle and I can't just have a loudspeaker and yell out commands, right?
So right.
She's a deaf person. And so, and then, the interpreter, has to be somewhere where he can see me and hear me and she can see him so that this can happen. So it was very complicated to make that happen. That was just logistically. But then there were other days which, things were just difficult because of either the schedule or, there was just this one day where a lot of extras were involved and we were pressed for time, in the university there. So on a low budget film, every day is a tough day. But this was especially tough because, we had scenes with VFX and deaf actors. So that makes it doubly, complicated. Yeah.
How many days was this?
This was 17 shooting days.
Oh, wow. That's quick. I bet every day was tough then.
not to mention we have a car flying off a cliff, right? So that was another complicated day because it's not just a one shot. There is there's a pivotal scene playing out there with a car kind of dangling on a cliff, and
Can you talk about that? How is that how is that done exactly with the dangling? I mean, is there, I mean, maybe this is a dumb question, but I know, I mean, you had to have the car physically there, right?
Yes. The car was, the thing with that is, that location, you know, the kind of mountain, the narrow road, mm-hmm. the snaking roads and the lake below, that's all real. That's just out of, you know, Sudbury, a couple of hours drive of Sudbury. And so we lucked out with the location. I thought that was a perfect location for setting that scene. And we had to kind of adapt the script to the location a little bit. So all of that is real. We had the car there. There's an accident happening. And so the accident was actually, you know, that's none of that is VFX. Mm-hmm. You know, that's all stunt driving and all of that. And yeah, and we did have the car kind of dangle on the edge there. Now, some of it was, kind of tweaked with VFX. Mm-hmm. But we did have a car dangling there and all of that. Yeah.
I rarely do this with directors, but I've got to ask if you were in this universe and there was another version of you and you both were weakening each other and you knew that only one could stay, like Highlander, this is what's kind of fascinating about the movie, because there's moral choices that have to be made. What do you think you would do in that situation?
Yeah, actually I thought about that a lot. I mean, you know, when I was, when I read the script and I was internalizing this whole thing and, you know, thinking about this, I thought long and hard and I don't know. It is very difficult. The thing is, it brings up those questions, right? Like, well, why do I have a greater right to exist, you know, this version and not the other version? Why? You know, it's very difficult to justify. Now, I can try to justify that, in many different ways. I'm a better person. I do this, I do that, or whatever. But mm-hmm. I'm sure that other version has exactly the same justifications, maybe better, you know?
Right.
So it is very difficult to say. And I don't know. And then, you know, the uniqueness of this version, you know, of course, this version feels more unique and more real to me. But when obviously you think about it, that other version feels unique and real to the other version. So mm-hmm. morally, you know, there's no way to tell who has the greater right to exist. So I don't know. It is just, it's fascinating. It's mind boggling. It, you know, it makes my brain hurt thinking about it. And I don't have a clear answer for that.
Yeah.
And you know, my goal, my hope is that after watching the movie, even if, you know, for a little bit, you know, people go on this journey thinking literally, okay, what if I wake up tomorrow and there's another version of me sitting on, you know, on the bed, mm-hmm. you know, and only one of us can survive, can make it through the day. It's a very interesting, you know, journey to go on. I think it reveals a lot about you. You know, you might learn a few things about yourself, you know, going on that journey.
Jonathan, anything else?
Well, I was just curious. So this was, so when was, this was shot in 2018, I guess, 2019?
Yeah, we shot it in 2018. We finished the movie in, I think the autumn of 2019. And then we went on a little bit of a festival run, right? Actually, we were just beginning our festival run, you know, we had our first one in December, then January, and February of 2020 was our last one, and then the world shut down. So our hope at that time was to release the movie in the summer of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, everything went off track. So I'm glad finally it's releasing now.
Yeah, because I've just been thinking about that recently, because a lot of these movies we're going to the theaters and watching, you know, have been done for, you know, or watching on demand or whatever, have been done for a couple of years. So is that, I don't know, I guess I'm just curious, like, how weird that is. Like, you're, you know, interviewing, you're doing press and stuff. Well, I guess you had it at festivals though, right? So I guess you had already done some press for it prior to this year, but or is it just kind of joy that it's finally out there?
Absolutely. You know, I was very nervous because the delay, you know, things were taking so long, and you know, everything had to be redone and renegotiated, and I was very nervous. I was, you know, obviously, you know, as a director, you want your movie out there, and you just want people to get a chance to see it and see how they respond. But on top of that, I mean, you just know that it's, you know, it's a lower budget film. I was really concerned that we might not be able to survive this pandemic related, you know, the whole business aspect of it. And, you know, like Doug called it, you know, the COVID death. We would suffer a COVID death, you know. And I was really concerned about that. So yeah, it is a huge relief that that it's coming out now, and I'm just glad that you know, some of the movies that I know that were in the same boat, they kind of then compromised and they just went in for, you know, a quicker but a more modest release, not theatrical, just directly on digital during the pandemic. And so there was a lot of choices to be made, you know, like, do we wait and, you know, go back to our original plan, or do we, you know, release it and, you know, get something out of it. So, you know, some movies did that. I don't know how well it worked out for them, but, you know, it was tough. You know, I was just very concerned that we might, you know, things might not work out. But I'm really glad that the distributors, they really liked the film, and they thought it is worth, you know, waiting and doing a better release, you know, once the situation is better, and not just putting it out there for the sake of putting it out there.
It feels like right now, like more than any time since the pandemic, it feels like in the last month or so that people are just really reinvigorated to like go to the theater and go see, or just go see movies however they can.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, you couldn't. This might be the perfect time for the release.
I agree 100%. Yeah, this really feels like the right time. And again, even for this subject matter, I think it's the right time. So overall, I'm happy. The delay certainly was nerve-wracking, and it's totally not weird talking about something that, you know, I shot a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
because it still feels so fresh. You know, it is. You know, I didn't even for this interview, I'm working on something else right now. As soon as I didn't prepare or anything. As soon as we started, you know, I just got into it because this is still so fresh.
Oh, wow.
It's an important, you know, it's a great story. It is something, that I enjoyed working on and thinking about and doing it. And so, you know, whenever I get a chance to revisit that world, I enjoy it.
Awesome. Very cool.
And by the way, and again, not to give away anything, but I do like the use of the infinity symbol in this movie.
Okay.
I like that a lot, because it's easy to watch something like this and kind of forget that they even bring this up. And then have it mean a lot more by the end of it. So I really enjoyed that. All right, Gaurav, thanks so much for giving us your time today. It was fun talking about this movie.
No, thank you very much for having me. I'm so glad that to get a chance to talk about it. So.
Yeah, the movie is Multiverse. It comes out in theaters November 12th, on demand and digital November 16th, and it's on DVD and Blu-ray January 11th. That's going to do it for this interview. It's Chris Atkinson and Jonathan Watkins. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.